Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get to the docket. First, they're finishing up a hearing right now regarding Chad Daybell's motion for a change of venue. Second, did the dog do what he set out to do? Things were not so rosy in the Murdoch family. And is the Confederate flag relevant in the Ahmaud Arbery matter, or is it so prejudicial it can't come into evidence? And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. The channel where me, a practicing criminal defense attorney, explains the facts, the procedures, and the law regarding cold cases and current actual true crime matters. Welcome. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live. And as always, leave me a comment below about what you think about the cases that we talked about here today. Now, don't forget to listen to this show and past shows by downloading Crime Talk on your favorite podcasting app like Apple or Spotify. Any of them will have it. Look for Crime Talk with Scott Reich. Now, real quick, let's support the people supporting Crime Talk. Please go to crimetalkprep.com and claim your 3 months emergency food kit. In today's world of supply chain shortages and unknown changing rules, you don't really know what to expect. Literally, I just went to Costco the other day and they were back to limiting toilet paper again. I went to the car dealership yesterday, needed a new tire. One, guess what? There's a 6 week wait for that tire. So I had to buy four that they just happen to have in stock. So you have to be prepared for the unexpected. So go to crimetalkprep.com, hit the link, you'll receive $100 off the best selling 3 month emergency food kit. This food stays fresh for up to 25 years in proper storage, so it will be there when you need it. All the meals in the food kit average over 2,000 calories per day. Don't wait, go to crimetalkprep.com and claim your 3 month emergency food kit while you still can. All right, let's get to the docket. All right, there's a hearing going on literally as we speak. They're at the stage of closing arguments. You can watch the whole thing on Crime Talk. We've been bringing it to you live today. But let me give you a quick recap. Chad Daybell says we need to move the trial because he cannot receive a fair trial in the jurisdiction that he is in. Pretty straightforward, probably pretty darn accurate. The district attorney is saying, well, we don't necessarily disagree. There's a lot of people in the community that are aware of this case. There's been a lot of publicity, obviously. But we think that we should be able to seat jurors from another jurisdiction and then basically bring them down for a lovely vacation there in Rexburg for about a month or so, sequester them, and that would be the best. Otherwise, it's going to be really expensive for the sheriff to house Chad Daybell, Lori Vallow, things of that nature, and having their deputies travel wherever they need to go in the state. We'll see. You know, I've said this before in change of venue hearing, it's either kind of all or nothing. Either the judge is going to agree that, yes, nobody can get a fair trial, let's move it, or you wait and you see if you bring in enough jurors, are you able to seat 12 plus the appropriate number of alternate jurors before you say, guess what? We can't find, you know, 12 impartial jurors that can listen to the evidence, reserve judgment till they hear all the evidence in the case, and then follow the law that the court gives them in the jury instructions. That's the general qualifications for a juror. It doesn't mean that somebody has to have never heard about the case. It just simply means they're willing to put aside any beliefs they may have, listen to that evidence, and then make the decision based upon the law and the facts presented. We'll see. We'll talk about it tonight when we go live at 6 p.m. Mountain Time if the judge rules. Closing arguments taking place right now. We'll see if Judge Boyce actually rules from the bench or whether he's going to issue a written order. Or if I was being a little bit sarcastic, I would say we'd probably have a hearing to schedule a hearing to announce his order. But hey, that's just me being a little sarcastic. All right, next on the docket. That's right, more Brian Laundry information. And let's face it, one of the best things about being a criminal defense attorney is you get to talk about the elephant in the room. You get to ask the questions that are not always the politically correct questions, but it's the question that everybody in the room really wants to know. And the question today is, did the dog, that's right, Dog the Bounty Hunter, Dwayne Chapman, do what he set out to do? Well, he hasn't found Brian Laundry yet, but guess what? He's apparently been contacted by multiple networks to return to TV after he, you know, joined the manhunt for Brian Laundry. Now, the 68-year-old television personality apparently has been contacted by numerous broadcast channels who have expressed interest in bringing him on board. Now, obviously, Dog earned attention from television executives since he joined the search for Gabby Petito's fiance, which led him to trend on social media. Now, there's apparently been no filming involved as of right now, other than the Dog's wife, Francie, and apparently she's recorded some of their search on her cell phone. Now, the Dog was interviewed by TMZ and stated that he did not have the ulterior motive of landing a television gig when he joined the Laundry manhunt. In fact, Chapman insisted that he was on his honeymoon with his new wife, because remember, his previous wife had passed away from cancer, when the news broke of Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry, and he only chose to get involved because of his unique skill set and the fact that he was only an hour away from where he was last seen, referring to Brian Laundry. Now, regardless, he also said that if a TV deal comes along, it would be something that he would consider. Now, you have to remember, for those who have a short memory, his TV show, Dog Chapman, remember the whole bounty hunter thing? He got canceled, literally canceled, for some inappropriate comments that were made, and he was gone. So the question is, did the Dog accomplish what he had to do? Let me know in the comments. Is he just being a good citizen, or was there some ulterior motive? All right, so as we stated, Dog, he still believes that old Brian Laundry is still alive and somewhere in the wilderness, since he is a survivalist, and he showed no indication that he plans to take his own life. Duh, I've been saying that from early on. He added that he assumes he is alive, but he probably is not doing well. But you never know. Survivalists can do really well out there on their own, assuming that's where they are. Or they could be on a boat in a foreign country. When asked if he thought Brian Laundry was suicidal, Chapman replied, no. If you go to his Instagram and look at what kind of person he really is and the books that he reads, and especially a favorite book, not books for suicidal people, according to Chapman. And the book that he is referring to is a book that he was holding in a video. It's Jeff Vandermeer's Annihilation, a novel about people exploring uncharted terrain who go missing. So Chapman believes that Laundry might be hiding out in the Fort de Soto Park in Pinellas County, where he camped out with his family last month. We'll have to see. I don't know. Like I said, I've said this before, we'll all find out at the same time together, because frankly, nobody knows, except maybe the parents. I think they know something. Anyway, so some breaking news is that Brian Laundry's lawyer, the family lawyer, says that Brian Laundry flew home to Florida to empty a storage unit 5 days after he and Gabby Petito got into a physical fight in Utah before rejoining his fiance just 2 days before her final phone call. Now, the attorney, Steve Bertolino, claimed Laundry took a commercial flight from Salt Lake City, Utah to Tampa, Florida on August 17th. He then returned 5 days later on August 23rd to rejoin Gabby on their trip. Now, Bertolino said that the purpose of the quick visit was to pick up items and close the storage unit because the couples were thinking of extending the road trip. Now, the reported flight out of Utah came 5 days after police in Moab, Utah, were called to a report of a man slapping a woman on August 12th. And we've seen the body cam footage showing Petito telling cops that Laundry hit and cut her with his nails. Laundry's August 23rd return, came just days before Petito was last seen alive. And on August 25th, she made her last phone call to her mom back in New York. Now, there's witnesses that say they saw an incident with the couple in a restaurant on August 27th. And so it's not clear when Petito may have died, but her body was obviously found on September 19th. And then we have Brian Laundrie's sister, Cassie Laundrie, and her husband, and they spoke to reporters outside of their home last night. Now, Cassie said in the interview that investigators had asked her not to make any public comments, but that she felt she could no longer stay silent as the media disruption was upsetting her children. Cassie also addressed the earlier interview in which she said she had not spoken to her brother. She stated that that previous interview has come into question after confirmed reports that Cassie joined her brother and her parents on a camping trip the first week of September. Now, Cassie is now saying that she last spoke to Brian in person on September 6th while he and their parents went camping at the Fort DeSoto Park in Florida. And Cassie said she and her own family dropped in very briefly and then left, not thinking that anything was amiss. Cassie even shared a couple of photographs she says she took with Brian that day, with him hanging out with her kids, his nephews. And sure enough, he looks cheerful and very nonchalant. Now, Cassie Laundrie told reporters that her quote was taken out of context as she was referring to not having spoken to her brother since she learned that Gabby Petito was missing, not before. When Cassie was asked if she believes her brother killed Petito, who was found dead in Wyoming on September 19th, she said, "I don't know." Cassie says that she is just as blown away as everyone else in regards to how her parents are reacting to everything. She said that she is just as frustrated as everyone else and also wants answers. Cassie further stated, "I'm in the boat where I'm getting ignored by my family and thrown under the bus by my family's attorney." Now, you have to remember, in the interview on Good Morning America that aired Tuesday, Cassie Laundrie said she does not know where her brother is and that she would turn him in if she did. She also addressed a visit from her brother and her parents on September 1, just after he returned home from the cross-country trip without Gabby Petito. Cassie Laundrie said her family drove to her home in Brian's Mustang and that she did not realize at the time that her brother had come back from the road trip with the converted camper van he and Petito had been traveling in. She further stated, "I really wish he had come to me first that day with the van because I don't think we'd be here." Cassie also said she doesn't know if her parents have any involvement with or knowledge of Brian's disappearance. Like I said, she doesn't know. I kind of tend to believe her. Seems like she would kind of crack under pressure. And obviously, police always kind of look for circumstances to see who is the weakest link. And if they knew any information, would they in fact tell it? Cassie certainly seems to be there for the family because mom and dad are holding strong. And I've said this before, if you thought your child was in danger, wouldn't you be out there looking for them? Just an observation. I think they got them the heck out of Dodge. I think everybody's going north. I think they should be looking south. Maybe Cuba. No extradition treaty from Cuba. Just saying. All right, next on the docket. Yep, that's right. More Murdoch information. Apparently, things were not that rosy in the Murdoch marriage. Now, apparently, the marriage between Alex Murdoch and his wife, Maggie, were reportedly in great flux before Maggie's murder back in early June. A family friend said that the couple repeatedly argued over money and Alex's drug use. The source said they never saw the Murdochs show any affection to one another and that Alex had checked out of the family. Now, this family source said that their marriage was absolutely on the rocks. Now, Maggie felt trapped in the marriage and she was hiding money in a closet. However, the tipster was unsure whether she was pilfering money to cover bills or because she was planning to leave Alex Murdoch. This family friend source also said that Maggie had been dealing with her husband's pill addiction for for some time, but the financial issue that it was causing were new. Apparently, Maggie confronted Alex about the money more than once, and his response was always, "Leave it to me. I'll figure it out just like I did the last time." Now, it's claimed through this family source that Alex's drug addiction appears to contradict those made by Alex's attorney, who said Alex became addicted to opioids after the murder of his wife and son. The pair were found fatally shot, obviously, in the family's South Carolina hunting lodge in June. And the attorney also claimed Alex embezzled millions from his law firm to fund his pill addiction. Now, Alex, who's charged with fraud, is currently free on $20,000 in bond. Still no arrest has been made in connection with Maggie and Paul's murder. Now, let's talk about a little bit of this. Obviously, Alex Murdoch had the world handed to him. Successful private practice that his father and grandfather had started. He's still basically involved in everything that's taking place. This guy should have more money stashed away. Could somebody spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on pills? You betcha. Seen it. It takes place, okay? Because they're taking so many of them, and even when you're buying these things on the black market, you're obviously paying a heck of a lot more than you would than if you were getting them at the pharmacy. You also then become the subject of blackmail because these people are going to say, well, hey, you have money. The price just went up. But apparently, something was amiss because nobody knew exactly what was going on. We've all probably seen people that were addicted to pills. They were able to hide it for an extended period of time. But when the money runs out or they're not doing their job, it all comes to a huge fester. Now, no one can really speak to what the relationship was like for Alex and Maggie Murdoch, but it didn't sound like it was, you know, loving relationship. They've been married for a long time. The kids have gone to college. Stuff like that happens where they go their separate ways. The fact that there were so many dealings that Alex Murdoch had in relation to stealing the money from his firm, his housekeeper, he sounds like a very manipulative individual and could have easily snowed Maggie into thinking everything was okay. Apparently she did not, if she was trying to stash money. Sounds like possibly to get away. It doesn't sound like she was really involved in paying the family bills if Alex Murdoch was taking care of everything like he did last time. So this isn't the first time. Apparently they had had financial issues. But, you know, we've all seen people that have done really well. They spend a lot of money. A lot of money goes out. You have a couple of bad months, and next thing you know, you're in trouble. It can happen. And I'm sure the police are looking at Alex Murdoch as a possible person of interest as it relates to his wife's death, murder, as well as the murder of their son. This man was in desperate need of money. He probably knew the insurance companies weren't going to pay everything. He was going to lose everything. He had no choice but to come up with something big and bold. We'll see how things turn out. Obviously, we'll give him the presumption of innocence like we do everybody until they are convicted or plead guilty in a court of law. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about, what was in their background? Now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. Next on the docket, the Ahmaud Arbery case. Remember that case? Well, that's right. Remember Travis McMichael? Well, he's one of the men accused of chasing and fatally shooting Ahmaud Arbery back in February of 2020. Can you believe it's been that long? Well, he's filed a motion. It's called a motion in limine to have the court ban the use of a photo of his license plate as evidence in his upcoming trial. Now, the vanity plate is described as showing the old flag from the state of Georgia, out of use since 2001, that incorporates the Confederate flag. McMichael's attorneys argue that the use of the photo of his front license plate as evidence is not relevant and prejudicial. And filings show that the state asked the court on October 1 to deny McMichael's defense team's motion, arguing that the plates were on the defendant's truck when Arbery was shot and killed and thus permissible evidence. The state's attorney wrote that the fact that the defendant, Travis McMichael, knowingly, intentionally, and purposefully attached a vanity plate to the front of his truck for all the world to see has nothing to do with the state's strategic decision regarding third-party communications that show racial animus. The prosecution contends that the defendant, Travis McMichael's choice, and the fact that this vanity plate was on the front of his truck on February 23rd, 2020, are intrinsic evidence in the case and can be fully be used by the state to illustrate the intent and motive of Travis McMichael. The document also describes the plate as depicting a representation to the state of Georgia state flag from 1956 through 2001. The flag was amended in 2001 to remove the Confederate flag imagery. Now, along with Travis McMichael, his father, Gregory McMichael, was also charged with murder on May 7th of 2020 for the shooting of Arbery, who was 25, unarmed, and a black man who had been jogging in the Georgia neighborhood at the time of his death. Now, William Roddy Bryant, who witnessed and filmed the shooting, was later charged with murder as well. Jury selection for the trial of the three men is scheduled to start October 18th, so really soon. October 1st, the Judge Timothy Walmsley ruled that Arbery's mental health records couldn't be used at trial as evidence. He concluded that the registered nurse's highly questionable diagnosis that Arbery suffered from mental illness, which was made during a 2018 visit at a mental health service provider, might unfairly prejudice a jury. Now, back in September, Judge Walmsley also ruled that evidence of Arbery's past run-ins with law enforcement, including two arrests, could not be used in the upcoming trial. Well, let's kind of take that, what we talked about last. A deceased's criminal history, not relevant. Witnesses' criminal history, not relevant unless they're testifying and it's a felony, then it comes in for impeachment purposes, only as to their credibility for truthfulness. Next, the question regarding Arbery's mental health, not relevant, okay? Nobody's there to question and cross-examine, and obviously the judge found that the nurse did not have probably the necessary requisite qualifications to form such an opinion. And as it relates to the flag, guess what? I think it's coming in. Why? It's absolutely relevant. It was on the truck that was used in the chasing down of Ahmaud Arbery, which is significant. I think it does go to show racial animus. However, is the prejudicial effect so great that it's going to prejudice the defendant? No, I don't think so. And guess what? He put it on the truck. He knew it was going to be there. The photographs are going to be there. And guess what? It's going to show that Confederate flag. Now, some people will say, oh, that's just old Southern history. You got to go along with it. Well, to a lot of other people, though, it represents racism. And that's the bottom line, what a lot of people think. So, is it prejudicial? Of course it is prejudicial to some extent, but he's the one, the defendant is the one that put it on his truck. And it's not so prejudicial that its probative value is outweighed by that prejudicial effect. It's what they call a 401 and a 403 analysis. Is it relevant? Some relevance, absolutely. Is the prejudicial effect so great that it far outweighs any probative value? I don't think so. And guess what? I'm sure his attorney's probably saying, you're the one that put it on your car. You're the one that put it on your truck. The attorney's doing his job. He's filing the motions. He's making the records. He's making the record so that if there's a conviction, it'll go up on appeal and maybe there'll be something to be reversed. We'll have to wait and see. Obviously, with the trial starting October 18th, it's going to be an important trial. It's going to be an interesting trial. And, you know, we'll get to see the facts and let the truth come out and let the chips fall where they may. Next on the docket, the dumb criminal contestant of the day. That's right, our dumb criminal contestant, Desiree Johnson, 49, behind bars for allegedly striking her boyfriend in the head with a saucepan containing freshly cooked grits. Now, Johnson and the victim were apparently arguing the other morning when she struck him with the metal saucepan inside the couple's St. Petersburg residence. The hot grits caused the victim to suffer from burns on his arms. Johnson was arrested and booked into the county jail for aggravated battery. She's being held on a $5,000 bond and has obviously been ordered not to have any contact with the victim whatsoever. Ladies and gentlemen, why do all the arguments seem to break out at mealtime? I don't get it, okay? You can have conversations, but you don't have to hit people. You can agree to disagree. Walk away. Now we see the dumb criminal gets arrested, held in custody, can't be in contact with her loved one that she hit with the saucepan and burned him with hot grits. Now, there's one thing that I love in the world. I'd never really had good grits until I lived in the South when I was in the military. But shrimp and grits are probably one of the best meals ever. If you've never had it, you should try it. But for our dumb criminal contestant of the day, Miss Johnson, you're there for two reasons. One, why'd you have to hit him with a pan? And two, why'd you have to waste all those good grits? Miss Johnson, you are dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, Miss Johnson, if you are crowned the winner of the dumb criminal contestant of the week, that's right, cool crime talk gear, that's right, lawyer, that's what you should have done. Contacted the lawyer, vent a little bit, but don't hit anybody. All right, that's all we have. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time. And don't forget to join us tonight, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, for our live show. That's all we have for today. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.